is Jo Van Cool, welcoming you to another edition of Animates. Right, Fudge. Now, yes. Welcome to 2RPH.
Thank you very much, Jo.
Where does your organisation operate from?
Okay, so Miracle Assistance Dogs operates from East Maitland in New South Wales, but we do operate in Queensland and Victoria in as much as I visit those states every year a couple of times.
Right. So it looks on your webpage like you're involved with assistance dogs in masses of different ways. What are the different ways?
Okay, so we train across almost all types of assistance dogs, excluding the guide dogs, of course. So we do the hearing dogs and the assistance dogs. And me personally, in relation to the organisation, I'm the founder of the organisation, and I also sit on the board of directors as the director of training. I train the dogs also once they come back from the puppy raiser. They have 12 months with the puppy raiser, and then they come into me and I finish off their obedience training and start with their task training. And I've got to say, I've got a dog here at the moment. He's 14 months old, and it's an absolute hoot training the adolescents. They're so much fun, and it's all about playing games and just enjoying the activities that they're doing at this stage. And just more recently, I've started contracting to the Guide, Hearing and Assistance Dogs Department in Queensland Government as a technical assessor. So I assess other people who want to do what I do.
Right. Oh, well, you've really spread your wings now. How do hearing dogs work? I mean, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah, a lot of people know about hearing dogs that they can nudge or paw at or push the person if there's a smoke detector go off or an alarm clock, microwaves, doorbells, etc. But what a hearing impaired person won't hear is when they drop their keys or their wallet when they're out shopping. So we can teach the dogs also to go back and find the lost items. We can teach them to bring the phone to the person when it rings. And people say, well, what are they going to do with the phone? They can't talk on it. There's systems that they can use. Usually it's a phone that they can type into, but it lets them know that somebody's trying to call.
Oh, right. Right. It's just a new slant on assistance dogs, as far as I'm concerned. I didn't know it happened that way. Now, where do your assistance dogs come from?
Okay, so with us, we have two programs. One is where we go and select a puppy. So we find a breeder that we want to work with, and then we train them up on how to do an assessment of that puppy when it's exactly 49 days of age. Because after 49 days of age, when we test the brainwave on a puppy, we don't do that, of course, this is the science. When they test the brainwave, it's now the brainwave of an adult dog, so it's learning differently. Up until 49 days of age, these are acting on instinct and just learning basic dog behaviours through the mother and the litter mates. Once a puppy is selected out of the litter, it comes into us and then off to the puppy raiser, as I said earlier. The other one that we do, though, is one that's becoming ever so increasingly popular, is the owner trainers, people with their own dogs.
Yes,
and
yes.
We have a program for these that's both online and face-to-face. There has to be a face-to-face component. And, we're finding this is really, really popular.
Yes, because some people have dogs that they'd really like to use for more than just pet business, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so we start with an assessment of the dog, because the dog has to be able to do tasks that help to limit the effects of the person's disability. I mean, most of us would like to have a dog that we can take to the shopping centre and restaurants and, you know, on planes and trains and whatever. But the criteria is that the dog must be able to do tasks that help limit the effects of a person's disability. So if what the dog is doing isn't related to the person's disability and making it easier for that person in their life, then that's not an assistance dog.
Right. So when you get a dog, what do you look for? I mean, if I brought my dog to you, what would you be looking for if I had a disability?
Okay, so we have a full assessment that we put people through, and it takes a minimum of about 3 hours. And one of the big things that we're looking for, we're not looking for training, if the dogs had training. We're looking for the dog's individual personality. But before we even go there, we take a look at the breed characteristics of that dog. So, for instance, if you have a look at a German Shepherd, they can be a bit protective. And so we have to explain to the person that, you know, if the dog starts to become protective, that that can't be an assistance dog. So we make that clear to start with. Mind you, there's lots of dogs who are German Shepherds who pass the assessment beautifully. They don't have that quality, but some of them do. And, for instance, a Labrador Retriever, a Golden Retriever, they're so popular because they retrieve items, and quite often that's a requirement for the person, is that the dog's able to retrieve items. But just as easily, though, it might be a Chihuahua or a Toy Poodle, because those dogs are fantastic at sniffing out diabetes, so hyperglycemia and hypoglycemia. And so it depends on whether the breed can do the task. Once we ascertain that the dog is suitable for the tasks that are required, then we go into assessing the dog's fear response. Now, we don't go around spooking the dog. What we do is we let the dog see a cat, for instance. And the cat's fairly close. It's within 4 or 5 metres of the dog. And if the dog doesn't fixate on the cat and doesn't start barking and carrying on crazy because there's a cat around, it doesn't matter if it wants to pull out to the end of the lead to have a look, because like I said, we're not looking for obedience, but we're looking for a calm dog. It'll meet horses and cows and ducks. We'll take it to an area where there's a children's playground or children are running around screaming at a schoolyard. There's so many different things that we do during the assessment just to assess how the dog's going to respond, because obviously an assistance dog needs to be stable, steady and calm.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why Labradors are used such a lot for guide dogs, etc. They're used in so many different kinds of situations, and I guess that's why.
And we're using a lot more Labradoodles now. The Australian Labradoodle Association, give them a plug here, these guys have done a wonderful job with their breeding programs, and we're seeing dogs coming through the Labradoodle breeders who are just so smart and so keen to work. They love water, so a rainy day doesn't bother them, the wind doesn't bother them. They're just fun-loving. And so once we start to put a work ethic on them as they mature, they just settle straight into it. They just think it's all fun and games.
I bet they do. What does the training cost?
Okay, so that depends on which program the people are going into, but if we say an assistance dog being trained by an owner, they're looking at approximately $105 a week. It's $320, though, for the suitability test to start with, and from there they go on to a program at $105 per week until the dog's trained. After that, they drop back to $25 per week.
And is there a sort of standard time it takes to train them?
Oh, look, that's like asking me how long is a piece of string, that old one. It depends on the individual, how good they are at taking on the lessons and following through with them and training their dog. A lot of people say, oh, my dog's not very smart. 90% of the time it has nothing to do with how smart the dog is. It's more to do with whether the person who's training the dog can actually do the training.
Yes, I can understand that. On your webpage, it talks about you training hearing dog and assistant dog teams. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Okay, so this comes under the Guide Hearing and Assistance Dog Act 2009 Queensland legislation, and they refer to the teams as the handler and the dog, with the handler being the team leader, and the team leader communicating effectively with the dog to ensure that the dog's working to the capacity that it needs to work to.
Oh, right.
So that's fairly simple. But we also have the ability through that legislation to have what we call alternate handlers. So, for instance, if I had a child on the autism spectrum who was a runner, about 10 years of age, 8 years of age, then mum or dad might need to hold another lead to help ensure that the dog is working with the child. They're not there to work the dog for themselves. They're there to make sure that the dog keeps working for the child. So we've got a lot of situations where that might happen. We've got some people who have cancer, rare disorders as well, and they really need an alternate handler to be able to help them manage the dog.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Is there any government subsidy for people requiring assistance dogs?
Don't I wish this was an easy question to answer and I could say yes. Look, there's no straight-out government subsidy. The NDIS is very higgledy-piggledy. They have guidelines, but there seems to be such a large variation in the interpretation of the guidelines. So there's some people who have managed to effectively get some assistance with the actual maintenance of the dog, but getting payment to purchase or to train their own dog, that's been a totally different kettle of fish. Not very many people have been successful in that at all.
It seems a shame.
And we certainly don't get any government funding.
It's a shame. Mm. Anyway, now one other question. Can you recall one specific case where you've been overjoyed to see a dog working well with a disabled person?
You know what? That's a question that I love answering, and I have trouble staying to just one story. But let me have a think. If I tell you about Moe, now Moe's story is sad for another reason too, because Moe actually didn't pass, but it's a great story. Moe failed the training to become an assistance dog because he was attacked by two dogs on three separate occasions.
Mm.
No biting, but grabbed and shaken and terrorised. And so the poor dog ended up with PTSD and terrified of dogs. And this was when I was out training him in the streets. Dogs just running the streets, which shouldn't be happening off lead, and running out of their yards. So it was really sad. But this dog is still working with the young man that he was being trained for. So the young man is high-functioning autism. At the time we met him, I think he was about 14 years of age. High-functioning autism, non-verbal, profoundly deaf and suffers from seizures. Now, when he has a seizure, as he's coming out of it, his airways are blocked. So he needed to be rolled into the recovery position to open up his airways. So as the dog would push underneath the back of his shoulder and roll him over to one side, the boy's head would be tilted back and that would open up his airways. But can you imagine a child who, once it had a seizure and people are going, are you all right, mate? Are you all right? One, he can't hear them. Two, he can't speak to them. Mm-hmm. So this dog was taught, this dog wore a coat that had a zipper in it with a little letter to be able to give to people to let them know or let the people know there was a, he'd just indicate to his pocket, people could open up the zipper, read the letter and see, oh, okay, the child can't speak and is hearing impaired. Now, the beautiful part of this story is even though this dog failed, he continues to work for this child in the home and when they go out places. And so, for instance, they can't go into shopping centres, but when he goes to doctor's appointments, when he goes to therapy appointments, when they go away on holidays, and that dog has already alerted the family when the child's been in the swimming pool at home and had a seizure, so saved his life.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Look, there's so many stories like that. If you give me an hour, I'll tell you them all.
And is the dog now allowed? I mean, does it cope with other dogs now?
Look, if another dog comes to his place and he has a play date, fantastic. But if he's out walking on the street, which is where he was attacked each time, he sees another dog and he totally freaks out, starts barking, pulling out on the lead because he's scared. But once he gets to meet that dog, he's fine. He's tail's happy and he goes, oh, hello, you're not going to attack me, okay, let's play. But on first contact, yeah, he's scared.
What a sad thing. Yeah,
it is, and it's terrible. I just wish that people would recognise that the dogs have coats on and, you know, keep your dog on lead.
Yes,
especially if it's going to be aggressive. People don't realise that what their dogs get up to when they're not looking to.
Well, and also it's actually illegal to have a dog off lead.
Oh, yes.
But you still see dogs off lead.
Yeah. And it's very scary how many. I'm just trying to think the number of times in the last few years that I've been holding a dog's lead and said to the dog, stay, and the dog's standing there, and I'm standing in front of the dog while another dog comes up and grabs it around the hock or tries to grab it around the neck. And the dogs are taught, just stand still, don't move. And, of course, they trust us. We're their trainers. They trust us to keep them safe. But there's not a lot we can do in a dog attack. So
No. It's
really heart-wrenching, and it's terrifying for me as well. I've been grabbed as well, never bitten but grabbed, and because we're so still and so calm, it doesn't escalate into a really nasty situation, but it's still terrifying for the dogs and terrifying for me.
Oh, it would be. I'd find it quite shattering, I think. Anyway, thank you so much, Fudge. That was just wonderful. I'm sure our listeners will be excited to know so much more about assistance dogs, because they must be increasingly in demand.
Oh, absolutely. Assistance dogs are still fairly new in Australia. Assistance Dogs Australia have only been operating for 20 years, and that means that, you know, it's still a very new industry and there's still laws to be sorted out even. Australia really wasn't ready for this. So the Queensland legislation is absolutely fantastic. I love working under the guidelines of that one. And New South Wales doesn't have an assessment for trainers at this point. So that's why I went to the Queensland government, because their guidelines are very, very strict and we're audited every 3 years. But, yeah, the number of inquiries that we get now. Can I give your listeners a phone number?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, okay. Please do.
2 days ago, we introduced a new phone number. It's 0249 343 051, and that phone is manned from 9:30 a.m. till 3 p.m. Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday.
And but you'd be largely in the Hunter area, wouldn't you?
Oh, look, I do have clients in Queensland, Victoria, Sydney, of course, all up and down the coast of New South Wales and Queensland and Victoria, yeah.
Wonderful. Just repeat that number so that everybody who's by now got a pen can write it down.
Sure, Jo. It's 0249 343 051.
Well, thank you very much. I hope people really do get in touch with you if they've got some questions, at least, and take it from there, we hope.
Thank you, anyway, Jo. My pleasure.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. I hope you enjoyed today's stories and the interview with Fudge. I'm sure you did. But now my thanks go to Katie Brooks, editor of Animates, and Joseph Schwanzer, our researcher. This is Jo Van Cool at 2RPH Sydney saying goodbye for now.